I recognized I wasn't alone. I wasn't the only one going through things or sort of wandering and not really having a direction.
The biggest thing that changed me, hands down, accepting his forgiveness.
You're just never too old, or you just haven't been a Christian too long to realize that there are new and surprising ways that God can work in your life.
God, the creator of the universe, wants to have a relationship with me.
I have learned so much about how to pray and approach God and let Him speak to me.
I found out my purpose, my identity, my gifts, and now I feel safe and free to be who I am in Christ.
It is so good and it is written so well that it's not a chore. We get to the point where we can hardly wait to read our next day.
It's one of the best studies that we've ever had.
The people who go through this are going to be changed and they are going to grow so much.
I would highly recommend it for all of you. It blessed my life.
Don't miss out on going to it. It will change your life.
Well, good morning, everyone. You know, actually, as I was just sitting there, I distinctly remember sitting at a wine bar, if you've ever been to that. While I was being interviewed, I wasn't being interviewed at the wine bar, but I was taking Rachel out on a date, and I remember thinking, you know, one of the biggest pros to me taking this job at New Life was that I'll be able to stick around and further date this girl, Rachel. Because actually the other job that I was looking at was in the East Coast. And so one of the things I was trying to figure out in my mind through that whole process was, what am I going to do with this Rachel girl? So it all worked out, and I'm so glad that I'm here, and it's been an absolute blessing. So thank you, guys. Hey, we're going to get right to the point this morning. I have 3 points for us, and here they are. The first is this. You have a story, and it matters. Secondly, your story finds its place in God's bigger story. And then lastly, thirdly, your story needs to be shared. So there they are. Now, as much as I want to think that those are powerful points and insightful and all that kind of stuff, I would also venture to guess that if that's all I said this morning, I think you would probably leave this building and a couple days from now, you're not going to remember a thing. Some of us in here won't even remember those once we leave this building this morning, okay? Why? I mean, they're just bullet points. They're just straight to the point. They're formulaic. There's nothing necessarily powerful or memorable about those 3 points that you can relate to. But what if I was to give those 3 points through a story? How would that change things? And so this morning, I'm actually going to give us a story from the Bible in my own words. It comes from the biography of John, chapter 4. And so you'll never, ever hear me say this again. But don't worry about opening your Bible this morning. Don't worry about looking at the TV screens. Just, I want you to listen to this story like you would normally with any other story. Someone is just reading you a story or you're watching a movie. You're just going to sit there and listen, okay? So we got to backtrack. We got to go back 2,000 years ago to this guy named Jesus. And Jesus has just left Judea. Now, I'm not talking about our youth pastor's son, Judea, but the ancient city, Judea. And Jesus is leaving Judea, and he wants to head north to Galilee. And Jesus, he's got some route options before him, okay? He can start out going east, west, north, south. I mean, just like us today, if we were to leave to go up to LA, we can start in a number of different places, right? You can take the 91, you can take the 5, you can take the 605, 405, whatever freeway you want to sit on for a couple hours, okay? But you're always going to end up in the same place, right? Different routes that are going to end up at LA. Same thing for Jesus, but here's the deal. In this story, Jesus had to go through Samaria. Now, Samaria was the shortest and the fastest route, but that's not why I think Jesus went through Samaria. See, I think we're going to find out Jesus had to go through Samaria. Perhaps in this story, Samaria is actually the destination, not necessarily Galilee. And so Jesus, he arrives in Samaria finally to this little town called Sychar. And it is really hot. It is cooking. I mean, this is hotter than a July summer day in the Inland Empire. And I grew up in Riverside, and it can get hot. All right, it's hotter than that. And Jesus, he's tired. This is about a three-day journey. Now, he doesn't have any Gatorade with him. He doesn't have, you know, one of those cool backpacks now that has, like, you know, the water tube that you can feed into your mouth as you're walking, and you can put, like, Fiji natural mineral-enhanced water. Not the deal going on here. It's hot outside, and he's tired. And so he stops at this well. Now, this well, I mean, it's not just any well. This is, like, the well for the people of Samaria, the Samaritans. See, this is like holy ground because, according to their tradition, and is actually still there today, this well belonged to their great, 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 great grandfather, Joseph. Joseph's father, Jacob, had given this well to them, and the Samaritans thought, they believed, and they believed rightly, their ancestry came from Jacob, from Joseph. And so this is holy ground, this well that Jesus is at. I mean, maybe kind of what we think of like the Vatican today. Whether you're Catholic or not, people consider it, you know, kind of holy ground, if you will. Anyway, so it's about noon. It's hot. Jesus is tired. And a Samaritan woman, she's walking up to the well to get some water. And Jesus just kind of asked her casually, "Hey, will you give me a drink?" And so the Samaritan woman says, "Why do you, a Jewish male, ask me, a female Samaritan, for a drink?" See, you got to know this. In her mind, there's a couple things that she's probably instantly thinking. The first of which, she sees this guy. Obviously, he's a guy. But here's the thing about males and females in that ancient world. You didn't talk to each other one-on-one in private unless you were married. And so she's kind of thinking, does this guy want to preserve his reputation? Does he want to kind of be considered scandalous? I mean, honestly, is he trying to hit on me? At least according to my tradition, there are actually countless stories of a woman meeting her future husband at a well. But furthermore, he's a guy, I'm a female, there's a problem. Second of all, looks like he's Jewish and I'm Samaritan. Doesn't he know we don't talk to one another? Like, we're actually enemies. I mean, not only do we not believe and kind of interpret the Hebrew scriptures in the same way, but we've been at war with one another. Why is he talking to me? And, does he know my story? Here's what you guys got to know. In the game of marriage, I'm 0-5. I've been divorced 5 times. That's right, 5 times. Why in the world are you asking me for a drink? And so she says, "How can you ask me for a drink?" And Jesus just calmly, quickly says, "If you knew the generosity of God and who I am, you actually would ask me for a drink." What? And not only did he say, "You should ask me for a drink," he said, "I'm going to give you living, fresh water." You don't even have a bucket to get water out of this well. Don't you know this well is deep? And last time I checked, wells don't have fresh living water. Like, it's stale, old stuff. Fresh living water comes out of a river. It comes out of a stream that's moving. And by the way, who do you think you are that you can get well out of my great-grandpa's well? Don't you know Jacob built this? He gave it to Joseph. He gave it to his livestock. The water's for them, them Samaritans. Who do you think you are? Don't you know? You drink out of this, you'll get thirsty again. But the water I give, you will never thirst again. Actually, what it's like is like an artesian well from within just gushing out and just giving you water. And she's like, well, give me that stuff. Like, I don't want to have to come to this well anymore. I don't want to have to get thirsty again. Like, I want the natural, chemical-free, electrolyzed, mineral-enhanced. I want the good stuff. And that's what she thinks he's talking about. Here's where things get hairy. Why don't you go call your husband and come back? Call my husband? I don't have a husband. You're right. You don't. And if actually you've had five husbands. And the man that you're with now, yeah, he's not even your husband. Everything that you've told me is absolutely correct. How do you know that about me? How do you know my story? Okay, fine. I'll start listening to you. Maybe you're a prophet. I get it. You know some things about me. And then she turns to religion to try to change the conversation because things are starting to get awkward. Well, why don't you tell me this then, you prophet? You know, all my Samaritan people, we worship here on this mountain. But you Jewish people, you guys worship like over there in Jerusalem. What about that? Let me tell you something. The time is coming. In fact, it's right now. That Samaritans will no longer worship here, and Jewish people will never worship over there. See, it doesn't matter anymore what you're called, who you are, where you're from. The time is coming, and it is now. It's through me that God is just, he's just looking for those who are just simply themselves, honestly and vulnerably to God in worship. Okay? Sure. Well, I know that when the Messiah comes, he's going to explain this whole thing to us. I am he. I am the whole story. You don't have to look any further. You don't have to look anywhere else. I'm making this all happen. And so just then, Jesus' disciples come running back because the reason why Jesus was actually alone was his disciples, his crew, they had gone into the village to get some food. It had been a long journey. And so his disciples, they come rushing back in the middle of this conversation, and they are absolutely shocked because they see Jesus talking to this promiscuous Samaritan woman. Now, they don't say anything, but the looks on their faces, they'll tell you exactly what they're thinking. And the lady, I mean, she gets the hint real quick. She drops her water pot and she leaves and she goes back to her village. And guess what she does? She tells the whole village, hey, you guys got to come and see. I mean, there's someone who I just met. I mean, he knows everything about me. He knows everything I've done. He knows me from the inside and out. Do you think this is the one, the Messiah? And so everyone in this village, they hear this. And because of this lady's story, many of them commit their lives to this Jesus. And in fact, they then invite him into their village, and he ends up staying there 2 days, dining with them and eating and just having a good time. And after those 2 days, even more people commit their lives to this Jesus, and they end up telling her, it's no longer just because of your story that we believe, but we've heard for ourselves. This man is the Savior of the world. True story. Now, I would venture to guess that everyone in here would probably listen to that story again, or maybe from someone else who tells it differently, rather than me just listing 3 points up on here. Your story matters. Your story finds its place in God's bigger story. And the third point, your story needs to be shared. Why? See, we are naturally captivated to a good story because hopefully it's captivating, it's interesting, it's relatable. I mean, what does a good story do? It paints a picture of real life. And it's kind of bigger than yourself, but it invites you into it and you can relate somehow, some way to the characters. I just watched La La Land a couple nights ago. Phenomenal movie. Now, I can't relate to any of the characters in there because I never tried to be a celebrity. But I felt like I was a part of the story, and Rachel and I talked about it afterwards. It's phenomenal. We love good stories. Here's my point. My 3 points and this Samaritan woman at the well, they both have the same points, but they tell it in way different formats. What do I mean? Point number one, you have a story, and it matters. How do you think this Samaritan woman felt? Do you think that she felt of value and of worth? No. Do you think she was marginalized by her community? Yeah. And not only because she was a female, unfortunately in that culture, females were treated as inferior. But hopefully you picked up, you know, she was divorced 5 times. So do you think she was ashamed? Oh, yeah. And we know this from the story because she went to the well at noon. You see, normal women, they would go to the well early in the morning or in the late afternoon. No one went at noon. Why? Because it's stinking hot. So why did she go at noon? She doesn't want to be noticed. She doesn't want anybody to see her. Hopefully you also picked up male and females, they don't talk to one another. Not scandalous. And they're for a whole slew of reasons. Jews and Samaritans did not get along. So do you think that she thought her story mattered? No. But did Jesus? Yes. Oh, it mattered. See, Jesus had to go to Samaria. Did Jesus geographically have to go to Samaria? No, but he had to go to Samaria for this woman's story. And I just wonder, in here, I just want to tell you, Jesus has to go wherever you are at. Because your story matters. One of the biggest lies that I think so many of us in here believe is that you think either you don't have a story or that it doesn't matter. See, you think you're just like the Samaritan woman. Nobody cares about me. I'm ashamed. I'm scared. Nobody pays attention to me. I just want to hide. That's a lie. Your story matters. See, some of us, here's the way we think. Well, Mark, yeah, great. Oh, I didn't have a crazy conversion experience, Mark. I didn't have this Damascus Road thing. You know, it wasn't like I was sleeping around with everyone, smoking dope, drinking who knows what, and then I met Jesus, and boom, it all changed. Oh, I got a normal church experience. Man, the worst thing I've ever done is I just took a cookie out of my grandma's jar. Now, you have a story, and it matters. Because here's actually what I would guess from my 55 years of living. You may look all cute on the outside. Your book cover looks great. But I'd venture to guess that inside, you are dealing with some pretty weighty stuff. Pornographic thoughts, hunger and lust for money, for power. You're dealing with depression, with anxiety. You're insecure about yourself. See, the scriptures, they don't play the churchy religious game that we like to do in America. Oh, yeah, everything's good. No, we're all like the Samaritan woman. See, you have a story, and it matters because your story needs to find its place in God's bigger story. Point number two. Here's what's fascinating that I realized a week ago. This is so interesting to me. Do you think Jesus knew her story ahead of time? Oh, yeah. I mean, what does he say? We'll read this. He says, go call your husband and then come back. And she replies, I have no husband. And Jesus says, you are right when you say you have no husband. The fact is, you've had five husbands, and the man you have now is not your husband. What you have just said is quite true. Jesus already knew her story. The point of the encounter wasn't for him to learn something that he didn't know. No, the point was that she would come out of hiding so that she would find healing. She would come out of hiding so that she could find healing. See, Jesus wanted her to realize that this Jesus guy, he knows your deepest, darkest secrets, and he still loves you no matter what. And I think Jesus was kind of just, you know, fishing with her, so to speak, to finally get it out of her, so that he could show her redemption and healing and this fresh, living water. Jesus was wanting to intentionally get her story out of her so that he could show her, I don't care what you've done. I don't care what your deepest, darkest secret is. I'm going to meet you in the middle of it, and I'm going to use your story, and I'm going to save a village. Your story matters. By the way, God already knows it. Why hide from it? Because here's the thing. Your story is not going to make sense to you until it finds its place in God's bigger story. And by the way, just to clarify, when I say story, here's what I mean. I mean your background, I mean your experiences, who you are, right? The joys and the struggles that you go through, like the good times and the bad times. Who are you? What has happened to you? Where are you going? Your whole life is a story. And Jesus says, life is not going to make sense until you put your story into this giant, bigger, redemptive story. And it's when she shared her story that she was introduced to the fountain of life. That's what Jesus says here, eternal life. You know, one thing I've noticed is that when people have a bad season of life or a bad year, my sister said this in 2016, they naturally kind of want to look towards a new, hopeful, new horizon. right? I mean, built into humanity is this natural longing for something good to happen or to change, right? That's what we call hope. Now, some of us, I think, are cognitively aware of that, maybe more than others. But this longing that we have, the reason why you relate to the story is because you have this natural longing to encounter redemption. And so the central plot of the scriptures, the whole Bible, is just one giant story. I mean, it's almost like a four-act Shakespearean play. Right? There's a beginning to every story. Chapter 1 of the Bible, in the beginning. Everything's good. Life is a garden. It's blissful. Chapter 2, something bad happens. The fall, sin and death begin to reign over God's good creation. It's spoiled. And chapter 3 is redemption. Jesus, him fixing what wrong happened in chapter 2. And now we're kind of in the midst of changing the pages between chapter 3 and chapter 4. Chapter 4 is the last one, and it's restoration. And he comes back to finish this rescue project. See, the scriptures from beginning to end lay out this plot of God restoring every broken thing. Every unfair injustice is going to be made right. And when we understand that story, I think we can begin to put words to your own individual one. See, the gospel, the good news, is the greatest story ever told. Your story matters, and it finds its place in it. Things begin to make sense. And so I just want to ask this morning, have you met Jesus like this Samaritan woman has? Have you met him? Have you encountered God's bigger story? And see, here's the last thing, point number three. Good stories aren't just meant to be told once. Can you imagine that? You know, someone writes a book and somehow they design something that only allows it to be read once and then it like closes, shuts off, and disappears. Weird. Point number three, your story needs to be shared. What did the Samaritan woman do after her story was revealed to Jesus? She dropped her water pot and she went straight to the village and she said, "You guys gotta come see who this man was. He knows me from the inside and now he knows everything I've done." And I think this is the climax of John 4, the story. And the whole town, one people, two people, no. The village committed their lives to Jesus because the woman's story. So when the Samaritans came to Jesus, they urged him to stay with them, and he stayed 2 days. And because of his words, many more believers came to him. And they said to the woman, "We no longer believe just because of what you said. Now we've heard for ourselves, and we know that this man really is the Savior of the world." The whole reason why Jesus had to go to Samaria was because the whole village was going to give their lives. Because a marginalized, forgotten, scandalous woman shared her story. Have you shared your story? So do you think the Samaritan woman thought that the whole village was going to be transformed because of her? No. Let's not kid ourselves. But I think we think the same thing today. Okay, Mark, yeah, I have a story. Nobody wants to hear it. It doesn't matter. That's the second lie that we believe. That's just as much of a lie that your story cannot impact other lives as much as it is a lie of you believing that you don't even have one to begin with. See, I'm a perfect example of this. I don't have a crazy conversion-like dramatic experience, right? And how many times have I wished that I did? Actually, it would make preaching a lot easier and stuff. But here's an interesting thing. A year and a half ago, in my sermon, I shared my own struggle with anxiety. And you want to know something? That was probably when I got the most feedback. texts, emails, in person. Because I was vulnerable and I took a risk. And I said, actually, hey, I do have a story. And it's a story of struggling with anxiety. And I couldn't tell you the number of people that came up to me and said, Mark, thank you so much for sharing. I've struggled with anxiety for years, and I've never felt comfortable to say anything. Have you shared your story? It matters. It needs to be shared. Here's a quote for you. I love this. Author Frederick Buechner says this. We'll have it up on the screens. My story is important, not because it is mine, but because if I tell it anything like right, the chances are you will recognize that in many ways it is also yours. And it is precisely through these stories and all their particularity that God makes himself known to each of us more powerfully and personally. And so if this is true, it means that to lose track of our stories, listen to this, if you lose track of your story, is to be profoundly impoverished, not only humanly, but spiritually. Love that. And isn't it fascinating? Think about this. How did Jesus teach his disciples? Did he like put them at a desk in a classroom? He's up at the chalkboard lecturing them? No, that's not how Jesus taught. Jesus taught by saying, come follow me. And they like literally followed him. Crazy concept. There's a sermon. But when they followed him, he told stories. Stories of two lost sons. Stories of a wedding banquet. Stories of hidden treasure. Stories of foolish and wise builders. I came across this quote. I love quotes. This is so random. Our American founding father, John Quincy Adams, said this. Crazy. When I was an attorney a long time ago, I realized that after much trial and error, listen to this, in the courtroom, whoever tells the best story wins. Yeah, go watch Law and Order or something, man. Whoever tells the best story in the courtroom wins. I think the church, the American church, has decreased or lost its ability to speak into culture because we have lost our ability to tell great stories. We're a part of the greatest story ever told, the gospel, the good news of Jesus. What are we doing? Your story matters. The best story wins. We've turned the gospel into just some formula to believe, some proposition to believe in. And let me be clear, statements, propositions matter. You have to believe things, absolutely. But I think it's time we go back to Jesus, back to the Bible, and recognize the beauty and truth and power of story. We should be the greatest storytellers ever because we have the greatest story ever from the greatest author ever. So, because I'm not excited about this or anything. That's one of the many reasons why we're going through Rooted. See, one of the values of Rooted is that it's an experience that involves conversations and questions and journaling and prayer. Heaven forbid we learn more about ourselves and then share that with others. See, it's not just, Rooted is just not some other Bible study. I don't say that pejoratively. I mean, it is based on the Bible 1,000%. And in a small group, in an intimate environment, you're challenged with challenging experiences. When you learn your story, you learn how your story fits in God's epic story. And so we as a staff, we've actually been going through Rooted. Right? We're doing it ourselves. We're not just saying do it. We're doing it. And so in week 4, which is about evil and suffering, it was a powerful time. For me personally, it was our most powerful time as a staff. I think most of them would agree with that. Things were shared that had never been shared before. Things were heard that nobody knew about. It got real. People were crying. I mean, it was like therapy or something. I don't know. And so I'm actually going to invite our Indonesian pastor, Ricky, up. Ricky shared something in our week 4 gathering that he said he had never shared before. Right? I had never heard this before from Ricky. And so we're bringing Ricky up. By the way, it's huge, courageous, bold of him to do this, right? Not easy. Just to give you a taste of one of the values of Rooted, the power of story. You don't need to know the context of what he's saying, because I think you're just going to hear a man being vulnerable. So Ricky, go for it.
Yeah, I was born and raised in a Christian family. I myself repented and accepted Jesus when I was in the fifth grade. It was then in fifth grade that I received the call from God to become a full-time pastor. After I repented, everyone in my family, my sister, my mom, and dad also repented and received Jesus Christ in their heart. Our family started to learn to grow spiritually, learn to faithfully read the Bible every morning together, learn to pray faithfully, and go to church every week. We made a commitment to live earnestly before the Lord. In the midst of my family's fiery spiritual growth, something happened that changed everything. My dad faced a problem with his job. At the time, he worked as a manager for Caterpillar Incorporated in a position he liked with a good salary. He was slandered by one of his friends, actually his best friend and another coworker. Due to the lies said about my dad, he was fired from his job right away, and even reported to the police and had to go to jail. I remember when my mom called me and my sister and cried uncontrollably. I will never forget the words my mom said to me and my sister. If she did not know Jesus, she would have gone crazy. At the time, my father had just loaned the house for us. Our family was so messed up. Finance became so chaotic for us. All we could do is just pray and pray. And later, my father was declared not guilty in court and was released from prison. He started looking for a new job, for sure. But our family story does not stop there. After my dad got a new job, a few months later, he suffered from a stroke. He was 49 years old. I was a freshman in high school. We were still financially destroyed as a family. In the midst of all the struggle, my father's illness, my mom had to work, and she was working with a very low salary. My parents still taught us something very valuable. They are faithful to pray and to read the Bible still. They always woke us up to pray and read the Bible together as routine. They remained loyal to the church. My mom tithes even though we were financially unstable. But there are ways that God miraculously provided for us. After I graduated high school, I listened to God's call to become a pastor and I entered the School of Theology. Although, to be honest, at times I want to run away from that call. I want to cancel entering seminary because I remember my family situation and I think I better get a job so I can help them. But God also created a miracle when my mom called me and told me that one family would sponsor all my seminary tuition. After graduation, I married Sarah, and since then have been serving God through full-time ministry. 3 months into our marriage, my father died at the age of 60. That means he struggled with a stroke for 11 years. My parents gave us a very valuable, again, inheritance that is legacy of faith, which I know is far more valuable than anything else. As a servant of the Lord, I know that God had a plan all along throughout my many struggles. I know that. But to be honest, to this day, I continue to ask the same thing to God. God, why did you let my father, who is a good person and great dad, who loved the Lord, get in trouble at work? Why did you let my father get sick when I was a kid, while my sister and my mom desperately needed him? Why did you let all that hit our family until everything was so shattered? We were financially unstable. And why did you not heal my dad? I'm sure, God, if he recovered, he would have effectively served the Lord some more. In fact, because of my past, I've been diagnosed with an anxiety disorder that has affected my life, my family, and my ministry. I continually ask God until now, God, why do I have to struggle with this, with anxiety each day because of my past? It feels so unfair. But when I joined Rooted, along with all the staff every Thursday, there was time for me to share my story. For the first time, I spoke out to the people about this part of my life in detail. I cry with them, and they cry with me. In fact, I also heard stories of those who turned out to have the same struggles that maybe are even heavier than mine. I'm strengthened again. Sharing my story for the first time gave me a new strength and was more powerful than I expected. I was reminded in sharing my story that I know I'm not alone, no matter what I face. It's my story.
You know, if you don't know Indonesian culture, for Ricky as a leader to share that he struggles with anxiety is a very serious thing. Thank you, Ricky. So we're gonna invite our music team back up now. And just as our response time, you know, once the service is over, you can sign up for Rooted at the Information Center. You can sign up online. There's forms, they look like this. If you're in a current life group, you can sign up with your life group leader, you can sign up picking up a form yourself there. And I just want to say a couple things. You know, if you're new here, if you're unconnected, if you've been here for a while, this is the best chance for you to get to know people, to get connected, and to experience God. So we would just absolutely encourage you to sign up for a group. And maybe you've been in the same group for years, and hey, maybe this is just a way to try out a new group. Maybe you've been in a group for years, and perhaps this is time for you to become a facilitator, a leader. And so as Juno said, we have training tomorrow night at 6, free dinner. So sign up out there. As usual, we have our response stations, communion here, to be reminded that Jesus has died for you, that your story matters because of his story. There's candles over here that you can light to signify hope. There'll be a prayer